Good Wednesday evening to you watching us here on Facebook. It is, I have almost exactly 6:30, which means it is time for us to begin at least getting our lesson ready to go. Good. If I hear myself, then that means you hear me as well, and I'm not just talking to myself. I'm going to share this for the Facebook to the Facebook page for the Wood Church of Christ. I would encourage you to share it as well. We're going to be studying, as you can see from the screen over here beside me, a great Old Testament story. You know, I've had people tell me they think that I love the Old Testament better than I love the New Testament. Honestly, I love the New Testament better just because that's where God's plan of redemption really comes to fruition. But when I'm given a chance to teach maybe 30, 35 minutes, I love teaching from the Old Testament because I love stories and I love history. And so that's why a lot of our lessons here, as we've been doing these online Wednesday night lessons, they've been coming from the Old Testament because there are many great lessons that we can learn and we can share. So we're going to be studying about how God wins with a small army. Wednesday night Bible study Gideon. That's who we're going to be studying. He's going to be the hero of our story. I have just shared this. Like I said, I would encourage you to share it as well. And join with me as we study God's Word together. You know, as we're looking at the book of Judges, Judges is a unique period within the history of the Bible. Because we know at the end of the book of Judges and on into 1 Samuel, Samuel really serves as the last judge, but during his tenureship, if you will, the people were tired of this system. To me, the Judges is a great system. Now, granted, the people were not always faithful to God, but we see there are many different judges that, and we could really start a whole study on that, but I'm just going to teach Gideon tonight. We'll just get into that. But in order to really understand, because the main crux of our lesson, as you can see here, is from the 7th chapter of Judges, but we really need to understand the 6th chapter of Judges before we look at chapter 7, because chapter 6 is our introductory material to Gideon. As is commonplace with the judges, they all of a sudden just kind of appear on the scene, and God starts using them for His will. So begin with me in chapter 6, verses 1 through 10. And we see 6 and 1. By the way, our first point is a farmer becomes a military man. We see in chapter 6 and verse 1 a very commonplace statement, sadly, in the book of Judges. And it says, the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian for 7 years. And the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel, and because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made them dens in the mountains and caves and strongholds. And so it was, when the Israelites had sown, the Midianites came up, the Amalekites, the children of the east, they came up against them. They encamped against them, destroyed the increase of the earth, till thou come to Gaza, and left no sustenance for Israel, neither for sheep, nor ox, nor ass. And they came up with their cattle in their tents, they came up for grasshoppers as multitude, for both they and their camels were without number. And they entered the land and destroy it. We'll just pause here for a moment. Imagine you do a garden every year. And then right as soon as you're ready to reap the benefits of tending to that garden throughout the year, your neighbors, who are your enemies, come in and take everything out of your garden. Oh, by the way, you're not living in your house anymore. They've made you flee, and you're now living in a cave or a tent or something like that. That's the situation that we find our Israelites in. And we see this happens for a total of 7 years. And so they make a plea to God. And they say, God, please let this stop. That's characteristic of the period of the judges. They're doing fine. They fall away. They plea to God. God sends a judge. The judge delivers them. Judge is no longer in effect. And then they start this cycle over again. Well, we're studying Gideon, and we're going to learn that his name is Jerubbaal, which means the cutting off or the hewing down. He's going to get his name when he cuts down some altars. He's a farmer, husbandman from Manasseh. He is not a man. That should be war. I don't know why it says fear. Probably because I was typing it too late last night. Gideon is not a man of war. And in fact, you might argue he's kind of depicted maybe a little bit cowardish in the 6th chapter of Judges. But that's also a great example that God uses all kinds of people to accomplish His will. And basically, he asked a question unto God. In verse 13, Gideon said unto God, O my Lord, if the Lord be with us, then why is this befallen us? Basically, he's saying, why me, Lord? Why is this happening to us? And why are you using me or choosing me to do your will? Sometimes we wonder these things. You may have asked, why am I going through this? Why is this happening to me? Why am I in close proximity to this? Sometimes it happens for a lesson. You got to remember, the goal is always to get us to be more faithful to God. A verse I have to reflect upon a lot, Hebrews 12, or a passage rather, 5 through 11. The Lord chastens those whom He loves. No chastening seems pleasant for the present time, but in hindsight, we see the benefit of it, just like when a father corrects his children. And we see that the people of Israel are repeatedly rebuked because of their sins. And we see that in the second chapter there. But we see God appears unto Gideon. And he appears unto him. In verse 11 and 12, there came an angel of the Lord and sat under an oak tree, which was in Ophrah, had pertained unto Joash the Abarazite, and his son was Gideon, and he was threshing the wheat by the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him and said unto him, The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor. Look at verse 14. Then the Lord looked upon him and said, Go in this thy might, that thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent thee? I put a funny looking word. You may have seen the word theophany before, or theopany. I've heard it pronounced both ways. I like theopany better. You may have heard of the word epiphany. That's kind of where you have an aha moment and maybe you're starting to put some things together. Well, a theophany, theo, it means God. So literally it's God coming to you and God making everything make sense. Now that doesn't happen like it did to Gideon today to us. We learn these things through God's word, but happened in Genesis 18, happened to Moses there at the burning bush, a theophany, if you will. But notice, he calls him a mighty man of valor, and he says, why am I a mighty man of valor? He says, my family is poor in Manasseh. He says, and I'm the least in my father's house. So he is admitting, he says, you're calling me a mighty man of valor. He says, but I am far from it. But God says, I am with you, verse 16. Now, we've discussed that their enemies are the Midianites. I feel like we would do well, before we conclude our first point here, to figure out who the Midianites are. Because too many times in the Bible story, we read in Judges 6 and 1 that the Lord delivered them into the hand of the Midianites 7 years. And we go on to verse 2, and sometimes we don't stop to think, well, who are the Midianites? Midianites, the name literally means contention or strife. They're relatives of Israel. They're distant kin. Of course, Midian would be the founding father of the Midianites. Abraham, his first wife Sarah, he has Isaac. He also has a concubine, Hagar. Before he has Isaac, he has Ishmael, kind of trying to circumvent God's plan there. That's another great lesson for another great day. So I've kind of put third wife slash concubine there, Keturah. Genesis 25, and the first two verses, he has three more sons, at least. And the sixth son's name is Midian. And after he has all these children with Keturah, there is some sibling rivalry, because there already was some between Ishmael and Isaac. And so Genesis 25 and 6, Abraham gives all his children gifts and he sends them away. But he keeps Isaac there, or he keeps Isaac there with them. After this great sending away, from what we can tell, those of Midian, they went west. The Midianites, eventually, in Genesis 37:28, are the people that Joseph was sold into slavery to, and then they turn around and dump him in Egypt. Moses fled to the land of Midian. Now we're in the book of Exodus. He marries a Midianite woman named Zipporah. So his in-laws are Midianites. Moses lived there for 40 years. We see later on that they seduced the men of Israel. The Midianites did. 24,000 of them were killed. I put a city reference there. We'll do that a lot in our lesson tonight. This is to the 2010 census, because I don't have 2020 yet. By the way, do your census if you haven't already. Mount Juliet has about 23,000-24,000 people. So seduced the men of Israel. They basically killed the entire city of Mount Juliet population-wise. Midianites were declared the enemy of God's people in the book of Numbers. Moses did decide to spare some. He kind of should, since that is his in-laws after all. And by the time we get to our story, the Midianites are a large group of people. They're distant kin, but they're not the promised children, because that comes through Abraham and through Isaac. Now we see Gideon shows some courage. I'm kind of putting all this up here as we go through this very quickly here. Gideon does show some courage, and he's willing to stand up for what God has said to do. He obeys the commands of God. Then people realize what has happened when he cuts down these altars. They want to kill Gideon. Joash makes a valiant defense, and he said, "Will you plead for Baal?" Verse 31. Will you save him, that he will plead for him? Let him be put to death while it is yet morning. If he be a god, let him plead for himself, because one has cast down his altar. So his Joash is going for defense there of Gideon, and then Gideon's name is changed in verse 34. They call him Jerubbaal, saying, "Let Baal plead against him, because he has thrown down his altar." Literally it means, "Let the shameful thing plead." Now we get into our actual lesson text of chapter 7. But before we do that, we need to realize, as Gideon is getting ready to accept his responsibility, the Midianites are camped all around Israel, and they are ready to attack. And Gideon needs some reassurance. And I love this story. Gideon said unto God, verse 36 of the 6th chapter of Judges, "If thou wilt save Israel by mine hand, as thou hast said, behold, I will put a fleece of wool on the floor. And if the dew be on the fleece only, it be dry upon all the earth beside, then I will know that thou wilt save Israel by my hand, as thou hast said." And then verse 38, the Bible says it was so. But Gideon needed another reassurance in verse 39, and he asked God for the opposite. It says, "Don't let your anger get hot against me, but prove me this, I pray thee, when I put the fleece out, that it be dry only on the fleece, and everything else on the ground be wet." And verse 40, God did, and it was so. We're going to figure out why this happened in our applications, but we see God delivered. Gideon needed a reassurance, and God delivers that. Now, chapter 7, verse 1, as the enemy is all around, those Israelites, Jerubbaal, whose name is Gideon, and all the people that were with him, they rose up early. There's one of my favorite phrases in the Bible. Pitched beside the well of Herod, so that the host of the Midianites were on the north side of them by the hill of Morah in the valley. We're seeing that he is going to rally the troops. He's going to have some 32,000 troops. Cookeville, according to the 2010 census, was a little over 32,000. I would say it's grown some in a decade. But you think about all these troops that he is rallying to get. We also are going to learn from our lesson text and context that the enemy has 135,000 people combined. Now, a decade ago, Murfreesboro was just shy of 132,000 people. And I'm using these cities because that's one of the ways that it helps me study, and I think it might help you as well, because you may be familiar with Cookeville and Murfreesboro. Now, I guarantee you Murfreesboro is a bigger city population than now, but just think about the people that live in the city limits, not the county, but just the city limits. That's what he's going up, Cookeville against Murfreesboro. Verse 2, and the Lord said unto Gideon, there are too many people here for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hand hath saved me. Now notice, God says there are too many people. God could have done it without any help or assistance from Gideon. Not one Israelite had to raise their hand or their finger for God to have any power. But God says you have too many people here, because if they win the battle now, or when they win the battle, they're going to say, look what we did, instead of look what God did. So he says there are too many people. Now, therefore, go, and I pray thee, proclaim it in the ears of the people. Whoever is fearful and afraid, let him return and depart early from Mount Gilead. And there returned of the people 22,000, they remained 10,000. So that's how we can deduce that there were 32. So notice, he says there are too many people. So tell them, if you're afraid, leave. 22,000 people. Now, if you've ever been to Farragut, it's just this side of Knoxville. They've got a really good Cracker Barrel there. We're not going to talk about that. Farragut, in the 2010 census, had 22,282 people. This massive group, over half, about two-thirds of the group, they leave because they're fearful. I want you to imagine the shock on Gideon's face. 10,000 people remain. That's about the size of Manchester proper itself. Imagine Gideon's shock. Verse 4, the Lord said unto Gideon, there are yet too many. Bring them down to the water, and I will try them for thee there. And it shall be that of whom I say unto thee, this shall go with thee, he shall go, and whoever I say, they shall not go, he says, they shall not go. So God says, I'm going to test them. I'm going to tell you. I'm going to pick the ones I want. Verse 5, he brings them down to the water. And the Lord said to Gideon, everyone that lappeth up the water with his tongue, as a dog lappeth, him shall thou set by himself. Likewise, everyone that boweth down his knees to drink, and the number of them that lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, were 300. The rest of the people bowed down on their knees to drink water. We see there were two ways you could go about this. If you just bend over like a dog and lap it up, there were 300. Those that got down on their knees and then pulled water up to their mouth, 9,700. But we see those that drink like a dog. Verse 7, by the 300 men will I save you, and deliver you, the Midianites, into thine hand. Let all other people go, every man into his place. So, the theory is, and that kind of carries over from the last slide, those that literally just kind of get down on all fours and drink the water, they're still ready to fight in a moment's notice. But if you think, if you have armor on, of course, they weren't really guarded as much in armor, but if you think you've got a whole lot of garments and you're carrying a lot of stuff and you have to sit it all down and then you get on your knees and then you lean forward and start drinking and the enemy surprise attacks you, you're sitting ducks. At least that's one of the theories behind it. So the 300 remain. 9,700 of them are sent home. Liberty, just right down the road from where the church house is there at Wood. Liberty has a little over 300 people that live actually in the formal city limits of Liberty. And that's what God's going to use to fight his battle. Now here's something I want us to note before we move on to our third point to consider. We are too concerned with the actual number sometimes. Sometimes we say, well, our number's just not high enough. We'll say, number this, number that. Friends, the Great Commission says to go into all the world and preach the gospel to every living creature. He that believeth and is baptized will be saved, but he that does not believe will be damned or condemned. Mark 16:15-16. That says, go into all the world, preach the gospel. Matthew words it this way, make disciples. God's going to worry about the number. You go out and preach the gospel to them, because there's still power in that today. Our third point we should examine as we're looking at how God wins with a small army is the fact that Gideon receives assurance from a strange place. And I like how this happens. This is found in verses 9 through 15, and it's almost as if it's an aside to the rest of our story. It came to pass the same night, after God has chosen his 300 people that he's going to use to fight this battle, the Lord said unto Gideon, Arise, get thee down to the host, for I have delivered it into thine hand. Notice, I've already done it. You've already been determined to win. But if thou fear to go down, go in with Phurah, thy servant, to the host. He's going to go down with his servant. He's going to hear. Thou shalt hear what they say. Afterward shall thine hands be strengthened to go down to the host. Then he went down with Phurah, his servant, and to the outside of the armed men that were in the host. So God is telling him, we're getting ready to go, but if you still need some assurance, I'm going to tell you where you can get some. And your hands will be strengthened. Take Phurah, your servant, and follow. And notice, they hangs out beside the tent. Verse 12, And the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the children of the east lay along the valley like grasshoppers for multitude. Their camels were without number, as by the sand of the sea for multitude. And Gideon, when he was come, behold, there was a man that told a dream unto his fellow, and said, Behold, I dreamed a dream, and lo, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the host of Midian, and came into a tent, and smote it, that it fell, and overturned it, and the tent lay along. Now, I'm going to go ahead and just tell you right now, it's not going to be an accident, A, that this man had a dream, or B, that Gideon hears this specific man telling his friend about this specific dream. In fact, God has used dreams a lot to communicate in the Bible. In the Old Testament, he gave dreams to Pharaoh, to Nebuchadnezzar. New Testament, Pilate's wife had dreams that Pilate shouldn't be doing what he was doing. Paul had dreams. Peter, many others have seen dreams or seen things in visions. But notice, verse 14, And the fellow answered, This is nothing else save the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. For into his hands hath God delivered Midian and all the host. The interpretation is that Gideon is coming. And it was so, when Gideon heard the telling of the dream, the interpretation thereof, he worshipped. He literally bowed down and gave God the thanks and the glory. And he returned to the host of Israel and said, Arise, for the Lord hath delivered into your hand the host of Midian. So God knew that Gideon needed a little assurance. And so he gives it to him. Now you may say, well, how did this certain fellow know that this was Gideon? Well, maybe God might have been providing him the answer, but also that barley bread would have been symbolic of the Israelites and some of the ways that they were cooking their food. Let's look at our final point here, and this will kind of take up the rest of our time and almost the rest of the chapter. I want us to note the fact that the plan is God's plan. Verse number 7. And the Lord said to Gideon, By the 300 men that lapped will I save you, and I will deliver the Midianites into thine hand. Let the other people go, every man to his place. God says, I will deliver them into your hand. Now we pick back up in verse 16. So he divides the 300 into three companies of 100 men, and each man has a trumpet there in one hand, and with empty pitchers and lamps within these pitchers. Now notice, sword's not going to be mentioned here, but in the dream, or the man that interpreted the dream mentioned a sword, and sword will come into play later. And Gideon said unto them, Look on me and do likewise. Behold, I shall come to the outside of the camp. It shall be as I do, so shall ye do. Do as I do. Friends, the greatest way a leader can lead is lead by example, not sitting back, kicking the feet up, saying, Well, here's what you should do. Friends, a great leader leads by example. So Gideon's going to be there, and he's going to have his pitcher and his lantern and his trumpet, and he's going to say, You watch what I do, you do. He says, When I blow with the trumpet, I and all that are with me, then blow your trumpets also on every side of the camp and say, The sword of the Lord and of Gideon. He says, We're going to surround the camp. You're going to put the torch inside the pitcher. And Gideon says, when I blow my trumpet, we're all going to shout. Now remember, You're going to have 300 people surrounding at least 135,000. But they're going to be around the perimeter, and everybody else kind of going to be in a basin there. So it's going to make for God's plan to work out perfectly. So look, Gideon, verse 19, and the 100 men that were with him. Now notice, he's leading 100 men, and they're going here, and another 100 men going here, and another 100 men going here. You're going to have 300 people. They came to the outside of the camp in the beginning of the middle watch, when they had newly set the watch, and they blew the trumpets, and they brake the pitchers that were in their hands. Now, you may be saying, I'm confused, why are they doing this? Trumpet, lantern, pitcher covering the lantern, but it wouldn't snuff the fire out. So all of a sudden, maybe you hit the trumpet against it, or somehow you break it, and it's complete darkness around this camp. And then Gideon blows his trumpets, and everybody breaks their lanterns, and all of a sudden, the entire camp is lit up because you have light from all these lanterns coming around from every side. And notice, the three companies blew their trumpets, brake their pitchers, and held the lamps in their left hands, and the trumpets in their right hands to blow with them. And they cried out, the sword of the Lord and Gideon. Now notice, you're in the middle of the night. You're the enemy. You're sleeping. The last thing you're expecting is to be woken up from the Israelites, and the last thing you're expecting is for them to be yelling at you. It's going to look like they may have 1 million people or more, but they're just 300 strong. But yet everybody, all of a sudden, everybody's lit up. That startles your enemy. Everybody's yelling. That startles the enemy. They stood every man in his place round about the camp. And the host ran. They cried. And they fled. And the 300 blew the trumpets. And watch this. And the Lord set every man's sword against his fellow. Even throughout all the hosts, they fled to Beth Shittah in Zarath and to the border of Abel Meholah unto Tabith. And the men of Israel gathered themselves together out of Naphtali, out of Asher and Manasseh, and they pursued after the Midianites. Now notice, they hadn't mentioned swords, but they had a sword with them. And so as those that kind of in the basin area are starting to flee, every man draws his sword. And the Bible says God put their swords against the enemies. What does that mean? God said, I'm going to give you the battle. You're going to win. That's one way. God helped their swords go in the right places. They ambushed their enemies. You know, our lesson was titled, God Wins with a Small Army. Now, he started out with 32,000, went down to 22,000, went down to 300, and God won with 300. God wins with a small army. Let's quickly look at some lessons here. I've got five. In my original notes, I had eight, and I cut them down to five for you. We'll go ahead and put the five on here. That way, we can just discuss them. Number one, Israel was plagued with idolatry, especially in the sixth chapter. It's not on display in the seventh, but on the sixth one, that's why Baal's idol has to be hewn down. Friends, you let idolatry in, it leads to all kind of ungodly practices. You think, well, you know, I love God, but I'm going to kind of also love money, love fame, love drinking, love gambling, love whatever. No, you can't put anything above God. It's not going to work out well for you, friends. Number two, the good we do will be left behind and influence others. You know how I know? Because the period of the judges happens 400 some odd year period. We're talking 1400 BC, 50, somewhere in that area. Over 3,000 years ago, these events happened, and I believe with every ounce of my being they actually happened, and I hope you do as well. But the good that happened here, we're still talking about. Number three, when Gideon asked God for proof with the fleece twice, and then God also lets him be privy to that conversation, Gideon has a lack of faith in himself, not in God. He needs to be reminded, because of God, I can do this. God does have the power. Number four, there is abundant proof that God does not really need any man's assistance. Numbers do not matter to God, but commitment does. Like I said, God could have I mean, God doesn't really have fingers, but for this analogy, God could have snapped his fingers and killed all the Midianites. Or God could have sent an angel and killed them in the middle of the night. I know it happened because it happened in Judges. God could have just eradicated. God could have made the ground open up and swallow them like he did with the sons of Korah. He could have. But he needed Gideon to know this, and he needed the Israelites to know this, that he is God and he has power. Number five, Gideon provides us with an excellent example of leadership. As we're slowly starting to return to the world of quote-unquote normalcy, whether in your job, but friends, especially as in the church, you want things to go right, lead by example. Maybe you're an elder in the church or a minister and you're in charge of maybe some certain area, deacon, or maybe you just lead a Bible class and you want them to do better. Friends, lead by example. Don't come into class and say, well, you need to be reading your Bible every day. Now, I hadn't touched mine since last week, but you need to be reading it. Friends, it's not going to work. What did Gideon say? You watch and you do. And Gideon led the fight. Gideon led the ambush attack. Gideon led by example. I love the story of Gideon. I hope you have enjoyed it as well. I know we mentioned a lot of stuff. We didn't read some of the outside of Judges verses. If you would like a copy of these notes, as always, they are free to you. I never charge for this stuff. It's my goal to make it available so that hopefully you can use it in personal study or maybe in a Bible class setting. You can either go to my website, thejustinreedshow.com/Bible resources, or you can just Google Justin Reed Bible. Do R-E-E-D for my last name. That's how you spell it. These notes and this PowerPoint are in the VBS notes section. You can also get some other stuff that didn't make it here in the presentation as well. Friends, I have enjoyed our time here this evening. Thank you so much for being a part of it. I do want to quickly encourage you. Tomorrow night, 6:30, I will join my father-in-law, Bill Boyd. We're continuing our study there in Matthew chapter 18, where Jesus Christ says, I am come to seek and save that which is lost, or those that are lost. So I hope you can join us for that. That will happen wherever you're watching this video live at 6:30 on Thursday. And then Sunday morning at 11 o'clock, we will worship there in the building there at the Wood Church Christ. It'll also be posted here online as well. Thank you again for watching. Do you have a chance to maybe pick up another study tonight? I'd encourage that if you have the chance. May the good Lord bless you. May he keep you. Please continue to pray. Thank you for watching.